Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is celebrity chef Jamie Geller, the author of the new The Joy of Kosher cookbook. We'll also have a visit from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. We concluded Hanukkah, the Festival of Lights, last week with joy and celebration. And that means we Jews are now done with all of the end-of-the-year holidays, and there is no need to buy any more presents for anyone. I realize that our non-Jewish neighbors are still in the throes of the shopping frenzy that invades our American culture every December, and so I have a modest proposal to make for all of our Christian friends who wish to avoid the traffic, hassle, expense, and round-the-clock pressure to find, buy, and wrap all of those festival gifts. Not to mention the continual pressure to click on those very special, select, elite holiday sale deals that are flooding your email inbox and inundating the internet and every form of social media, I have a very simple solution. Since we Jews are already through with gift-giving for the year, and since we actually have no more major Jewish holidays to celebrate for months to come, you now, and only now, have a unique opportunity available to you. This is the perfect time to convert to Judaism. That's right. If the end-of-the-year holiday pressure is beginning to get to you and you are secretly terrified of the need to shop for everybody in your life and then to pay for those credit card bills for the next several months, we have a very special deal for you. If you convert to Judaism right now in early December, you can spend the next month relaxing at home, avoiding all malls, and either watching as much football as you want or cooking what you actually like to eat instead of busily preparing inedible fruitcakes and other spectacularly unhealthy holiday treats for everybody else. Now, this is, of course, a limited-time offer. Because of the variation between the lunar and solar calendars this year, however, you have a special chance to avoid all the end-of-the-year holidays and just chill out through December. What a beautiful gift to give yourself. Now, remember, this conversion to Judaism offer might prove to be a better deal for women than men, since circumcision is required for guys. But it still beats rushing around like a chicken with its head cut off, trying to find the best deal on the latest gifts that seem like such good ideas now, but likely will be gathering dust in a closet by mid-January. Now, while converting to Judaism is normally at least a year-long process, and sometimes much more, with many classes, books, meetings, services, some Hebrew, rabbinical counseling, and introspective essays to write, for a very limited time, we here on the Two Jewish Radio Show are offering to provide you the chance to become a Jew by choice immediately. Just go to our website, twojewishradio.com, and purchase a special Jewpon, that's a Jewish Groupon, mitzvah voucher. Exchange that at a participating synagogue near you, and you can be a new Jew just in time to avoid Christmas. By the way, if you still need that circumcision performed to make it all kosher, we also have a living social deal for a local moyel near you. In fact, there's a song about that we're going to play. It's called, well, Moils.
I've never left a foreskin on the flesh. Perform a bris every other week in the sanctuary. And I'm so proud, I must confess, of the work I do. It's mandatory. But everybody's like you, gross, hate that you're not a physician. Bloodstain, swish, hack, ditch your tradition. We don't care, we'll answer to a higher authority. But everybody's like babies can't give consent. Screw your religion, that's lame. You're stuck in anachronism, we don't care. We aren't fazed by your ignorant glare, 'cause we're gonna stay Mormons. We're not afraid of a little blood. Your man-made law just ain't for us. We serve a different kind of boss. You'll never be our ruler. Let us practice our religion free. We live by God's rules. Circumcise your vanity. Since Abraham and the days of old, our practice hasn't changed at all in recorded history. Morals don't sway to and fro. And here's a tip, it will impress the ladies. But everybody's like you, gross, hate that you're not a physician. Bloodstain, swish, hack, ditch your tradition. We don't care, we'll answer to a higher authority. But everybody's like babies can't give consent. Screw your religion, that's lame. You're stuck in anachronism, we don't care. We aren't fazed by your ignorant glare, 'cause we're gonna stay Moyles. We're not afraid of a little blood. Your man-made law just ain't for us. We serve a different kind of boss. You'll never be our ruler. Let us practice our religion free. We live by God's rules. Circumcise your vanity. Time. I consent in my 8-day prime. Oh, 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 don't wanna tell you what to do. So leave us be or we'll cut you too. 'Cause we're gonna stay Moyles. We're not afraid of a little blood. Your man-made law just ain't for us. We serve a different kind of boss. You'll never be our ruler. Let us practice our religion free. We live by God's rules. Circumcise your vanity.
That was the remarkable parody Moyles by a group called Kol Ish, a Jewish men's a cappella group that formed originally at the University of Maryland. It's a song they have subtitled the Bris Anthem. By the way, I wrote a parody of that same Royals tune for Hanukkah this year called Oil that was, I say modestly, truly spectacular. But I must admit that this Moyles tune is pretty good, too. Well, that might just have provided enough silliness for one morning here on Too Jewish. In truth, conversion to Judaism is a serious and extraordinary process not entered into casually, and it does involve lots of learning and life experiences, and it can't be done quickly or casually. But for a limited time, and solely to help out our non-Jewish friends at this most stressful time of year, okay, just for fun. In any case, also for fun, our guest this morning is a lot of fun herself. Jamie Geller is a celebrity chef, a former TV producer who has become a star in the world of cooking. Her new book is called The Joy of Kosher. It's a great way to learn while you make wonderful recipes for your family and friends. Find out what brought her to kosher cooking and how it can be healthy and easy when we return here on Too Jewish. Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning, Jamie Geller, who's the author of The Joy of Kosher, Fast, Fresh Family Recipes, and the best-selling author of her earlier book, Quick and Kosher. A wonderful book, an entertaining book, and not a typical cookbook. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. And thanks for saying it's not typical. I always try to do something different and entertaining, so I'm glad that came across.
So I also want to say that while you are calling from a restaurant, which seems appropriate, you've actually locked yourself in the bathroom, so it's not too loud.
Right. It's a restroom. That's where I'm doing this interview from. I'm at a kosher restaurant on the Upper West Side, but I wanted to make sure you had a nice, quiet interview, so I'm locked in the restroom.
This is a Too Jewish first.
Are we having fun yet, Rabbi?
I'm having fun. So you did grow up kosher. Tell me a little bit about how kashrut came into your life and how it affected your cooking.
Well, like most Jewish mothers, my mother was super proud of me, and I had a career in television. I was a producer at HBO, but like most Jewish mothers, she was thought, God forbid, if I don't marry a nice Jewish boy. So she sent me to these Jewish like singles events in Manhattan. I was like the TV producer. I was going to the Oscars and the Emmys and the MTV Music Awards, and I worked on shows like The Sopranos and everything in the HBO arsenal. And she sends me to these singles events where they do like a really engaging, fabulous rabbi will do a class on the weekly Torah portion and hopefully apply it to these like single Manhattanites into their lives, and hopefully they can incorporate something. And then after, it was like a mingling event for singles. So I became so interested in exploring more about my, religion and being more connected spiritually. And kashrut was one of the steps that I took.
It's pretty interesting path. No longer single, kids, obviously a different place in your life. Seems like a good one. Tell us how this particular book got started.
So, well, my first book is called Quick and Kosher, Recipes from the Bride Who Knew Nothing.
Which was, of course, you.
Yeah, that was me. It was an autobiography. I chronicled my life, becoming a new bride, becoming a new mom, like entering the whole world of kashrut, and who knew about meat and dairy, of course, but parav, like, there's a third category. Everything threw me for a loop. And now, 3 books later, this is my 3rd book, Joy of Kosher, Fast, Fresh Family Recipes. And thank God now I have 5 kids between the ages of 2 and 8. And like every other mother, father, parent in the world, every day I open up that fridge and I'm like, what's for dinner tonight? And like dinner just keeps coming every single day. So how do you feed your kids? How do you feed them on the go? Obviously, either we're working or we have obligations to our spouses, to our communities. We're all so pressed for time. So how do we feed them, when we're pressed for time? How do we feed them healthy recipes? How do we get dinner on the table? And at the same time, we all want to entertain. So how do you entertain with ease when you've got this crazy life? So every recipe in this book, you can dress up for entertaining or dress down for every day. So these recipes do double duty, and I feel like we're all in our lives required to do double duty, and I want my recipes to work overtime as well.
Well, they do work, and we will talk much more with Jamie Geller, the author of The Joy of Kosher, Fast, Fresh Family Recipes, when we come back in a few moments on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke, new sponsors here on Too Jewish. We started talking last week about Freedom Smoke, the smokeless product, no tobacco, to get people off of cigarettes. What are the health advantages to using your product as opposed to smoking?
Thank you, Rabbi Kohan. We have a lot of physicians here in town, from neurologists to ophthalmologists, cardiologists, pulmonologists, sending patients to us because of damaging effects from emphysema, everything of the like that comes from smoking cancerous cigarettes.
And Freedom Smoke International provides all kinds of flavors, pleasurable experience, but not the same health risk.
That's right. You have the same experience as smoking. You have the hand-to-mouth, the mantra of the In-N-Out, as well as vapors compared to cigarette smoke. So there's no secondhand smoke either.
How can people find your product?
They can find us through freedomsmokeusa.com. Our toll-free number, which is here in Tucson, is 800-705-7013.
And then go into a store.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have three stores. We're opening a fourth in the next couple of months here in town.
We will talk more next week. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at tojewishradio@yahoo.com. That's T-O-O Jewish Radio. Or visit our website, tojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts.
Hametze menucha nechona al kanefei ha-shechina.
In sobering news, this coming Saturday marks the one-year anniversary of the horrific shooting at the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. That terrible tragedy culminated a period of 6 months in which there were several awful incidents of gun violence, including the Aurora, Colorado theater massacre in the summer of 2012. In the immediate aftermath of these ultra-violent firearm assaults on innocent children and adults, a huge push was made to pass some sort of firearms regulations nationally. You might not remember the national consensus that rapidly developed to do something, anything, about gun violence and the nearly unrestricted availability of assault weapons in America. You might not remember the outrage that a young man with apparent psychological problems, like the perpetrator of Newtown, could easily purchase such weapons. You might not remember that within a month of the attack on the Sandy Hook Elementary School and the mass murder of 20 little children and 6 brave adults, the President of the United States proposed very modest limitations on the availability of such military weapons to civilians. You might not remember that a week after the shootings, on December 21, 2012, the National Rifle Association called on the U.S. Congress to appropriate funds to hire armed police officers in every American school. The NRA also announced the creation of a school protection program called the National School Shield, which would be led by former DEA Administrator and U.S. Congressman Asa Hutchinson. No word on what progress the NRA has made on that. You might not remember that a month after the mass murder of children at Newtown, President Obama cited the incident while announcing proposals for increased gun controls. His very little proposals included universal background checks on firearms purchases, an assault weapons ban, and limiting magazine capacity to 10 cartridges. Relatives of the victims of the shooting and survivors from other mass shootings were guests during President Obama's announcement. You might not remember that in reaction to anticipated restrictions on firearms, gun permit applications skyrocketed in a multi-state trend. You might not remember that the only part of the president's proposals to actually get close to passage on April 17th of this year, 2013, a bill that would have just seen the restrictions on gun controls removed, Marchin Toomey background checks bill, just to allow some background checks, failed to pass the U.S. Senate by 6 votes. 48 Democrats and 4 Republicans voted for it. 5 Democrats and 41 Republicans voted against.
You might not remember that the NRA released a statement critiquing the failed bill, saying that expanding background checks at gun shows will not reduce violent crime or keep our kids safe in schools. Or that in a speech the next day, President Obama called the failure of the bill shameful and said the Republicans had willfully lied about the proposal on background checks. You might not remember that Gabby Giffords and her husband Mark Kelly created a lobbying organization to try to pass some sort of sane firearms legislation in America, and they are still trying hard to do so. You might not remember any of that, but you should. Because you must remember the 20 children who were slaughtered and the 6 adults who died defending them from a madman a year ago this coming Saturday, a madman with an assault rifle. You must remember that one of those little boys, a 6-year-old Jewish kid named Noah Posner, was shot 11 times with that Bushmaster.
Lenishemot, 6 million Achenu v'nei Israel.
You know, my friends, entire religions have been built on the martyrdom of one person. And many revolutions, including the American Revolution, hinged on the slaughter of innocents. You would think that the killing of 20 innocent children and 6 brave, also innocent adults who sought to protect them ought to motivate the rest of us to try unbelievably hard to change the conditions of a country in which such an atrocity could take place. And yet today, almost exactly a year later, the principal results are that the Sandy Hook Elementary School has been bulldozed and a new school will be built on that site. And yet another horrible incident of preventable gun violence will fade out of our collective memory. We live in a great country. We have a great country. But we really need to dig deeper into our hearts. We need to change how we think about violence in our society, how easily we make the means of mass slaughter available to everyone. Shame on all of us for just moving on without fixing anything. May the martyrs of Newtown, Connecticut forgive us. A year later, and no farther along. We welcome our Mivina on Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov.
So you head the Israel Center, but I'm not certain that all of our listeners understand what an Israel Center is, how it's formed, why it exists in, for example, Tucson, Arizona. Can you fill us in a little bit about how that works?
Yeah. Of course. So actually, the Weintraub Israel Center was founded more than 15 years ago. And it's like the main goal is to build a living bridge between the people and the institution of Tucson and Israel through culture, language, travel, community, and most important, relationship. I hope it says something for you, to you. I guess it is.
It does.
Yeah,
it does
of course.
Indeed.
Yeah. So by 6 different areas of activity, we're trying to really bring Israel to every place in Tucson. Like the heartbeat of Israel brings creates all kind of events for families with young kids to celebrate Jewish holidays with a taste of Israel, as we described last week about Hanukkah. All kind of lectures that the speakers are from Israel or talking about Israel. As we had Sharon Migdal last month,
A good friend and maybe the principal expert in the United States on water resources in the Middle East and especially in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And we also have a department, like it's called Destination Israel. We're helping families, individuals to find out, like to create a trip to Israel or design or to find out what places is the best to go in Israel. You can of course, call the Weintraub Israel Center. We have the Israel Education. This year we have adult education series with Congregation Bet Shalom, February 24th, March 3, March 10, and March 31st. Very important, very interesting lecture. Don't miss it. And we have the partnership together. It's an Israel celebration partnership. Together we have a partnership with two localities in Israel, Kiryat Malachi and Chof Ashkelon. And the main focus is how to build more people-to-people connection by all kind of programs. 3 years ago, I know that you remember that you host cooks from Kiryat Malachi. It was delicious. That's what I heard. And another, all kind of educational program. And
really a way of connecting Americans, not just American Jews, but American communities with Israel in all kinds of useful and productive ways.
And you know what? Not only on based on our Judaism, but on a common interest.
Yes. And if people want to find out more, they can go to
Weintraub Israel Center on Facebook or Jewish Federation.
JewishTucson.org, I think it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Are there many other Jewish centers around the United States?
Yeah, all over.
Israel centers, I should say, of course. Wonderful. Thanks, Oshrat. We'll talk next week. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Attention, Arizona income taxpayers. You can help send children to our community's Jewish schools without it costing you a dime. Direct your tax dollars to JETCO, J-E-T-C-O, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. Here's how. The state of Arizona allows its taxpayers to get a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations, who then provide scholarships for kids from kindergarten through 12th grade to attend qualified private schools. JETCO helps provide a quality Jewish education to children in need at Congregation Anshe Israel Kindergarten, Tucson Jewish Community Center Kindergarten, Temple Emmanuel Kindergarten, and the Tucson Hebrew Academy. If you pay Arizona state income tax and make your contribution to JETCO, you'll get a 100% tax credit on your Arizona state income tax return. Tax credit's not a deduction. Your taxes are reduced by the amount you give. Join over 750 supporters last year who donated money to JETCO and got it all back in the form of reduced or refunded state income taxes. There's an additional tax credit now, the switcher credit, which increases the maximum donation you can make to JETCO to $1,031 for single filers, $2,062 for married couples filing jointly. When we are fighting every day for the continuity of the Jewish people, we should all take advantage of this great opportunity. JETCO is one way to help foster a Jewish identity for our community's children. Contributions to JETCO have helped hundreds of children receive the financial aid they need to receive a good Jewish education. To direct your tax dollars to Jewish education today, call 520-647-8442, again 647-8442, or visit JETCO on the web at www.jetco.org. Help give the gift of education. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
There's a new movie out, The Book Thief, based on the book by Marcus Zusak. It was a great book. So, how's the movie?
Right. I did not read the book. You haven't seen the movie. So, the movie I thought was excellent. It got mixed reviews because a lot of reviewers expected it to be a Holocaust movie or thought it was a Holocaust movie. And in that respect, they felt that it fell short. But in fact, it wasn't a Holocaust movie. It was a movie about the power of words and language. And it followed the story of a young non-Jewish girl through the war years and then picked up many, many years later when she was living in New York City and finally died after living a distinguished life as an author. And one of the, well, there were a lot of Jewish angles to this movie, although it was not a Holocaust movie and it was not mostly about Jews. The married couple who adopted the little girl were played by two outstanding British actors, Jeffrey Rush and Emily Watson.
Yeah.
Both pretending to be German and doing a reasonably good job with German accents. And the setting was a small town in southern Germany. And my father, who ran a POW camp right after the war in southern Germany, said that it could not have been more authentic. It was exactly the way he remembered Germany right after the war. And this movie starts in like 1938 and goes through at least the 1990s, if not later. But basically, this couple, besides adopting the little girl, who has, you know, the normal network of school friends and neighbors and problems adapting to a new school and all that, the family owes a favor to a guy in some other city who is Jewish and who gets taken away, deported to the camps. And then
I think the dad was in the service in the German army during World War One with this Jewish guy, right?
Right. So in any case, the son of this person to whom the Jeffrey Rush character owes his life is hidden in the basement of this non-Jewish family and becomes fast friends with the little girl. And she becomes his eyes on the world. And he teaches her basically to become an author by asking her to describe what the day is like, what the sun is like, but to do it in original terms, to use her words. And she makes the world outside of his little prison, his basement, windowless, etc., come alive for him. And through this exercise, she becomes a very skilled wordsmith. And he talks about the role of words in Judaism, in scripture, in prayer, whatever, in a very knowledgeable way, but nonetheless in a way that a 12-year-old girl can understand. Hmm. It's very moving, and it's very beautiful, and it's an extremely well-made movie. So I recommend it highly to all of your listeners.
Yeah, and by the way, if you haven't read the book, it's a fantastic book, also told from the perspective of the Malach HaMavis, the Angel of Death. Really unique, beautiful, beautiful
right.
book.
The movie is also narrated by the Angel of Death.
Yeah.
In a very deep voice.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about.
And it's quite an unusual perspective.
Yeah. An extraordinary book. Sounds like a wonderful movie. Can't wait to see it. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Bernie Mandelbaum dies, and his wife Sarah calls the Jewish newspaper to place an obituary. Sarah says, "This is what I want you to print. Bernie is dead." The obituary guy says, "Okay, but for $50, you're allowed to print 6 words. Sarah thinks for a moment and answers, "Okay, so print, Bernie is dead. Lexus for sale." Yes, that was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we complete the story of Joseph and of his great father Jacob, also known as Israel, with the final Torah portion in the book of Genesis, Vayechi. It begins with a description of the death of Jacob, and perhaps even more importantly, the final blessings that Jacob gives to his many sons. But one of the most interesting aspects of this section is a brief episode in which Joseph, who knows his father is dying, brings his own two sons, Jacob's grandsons, Ephraim and Manasseh, to Jacob for a blessing. In keeping with an ongoing theme in Genesis, Jacob blesses the younger son Ephraim before the older son, Manasseh. When Joseph tries to correct his dad, Jacob assures him that this blessing order is intentional. Both boys will father great tribes, but the younger will exceed the older in accomplishment. We still use this blessing every Friday night when we bless our own sons, both in temple and at home. In the Bible, we always expect the older child to succeed at a greater level than the younger, to receive a certain bonus for being firstborn. But repeatedly throughout Genesis, the younger child ends up excelling the older and receives a greater portion of the inheritance. It's as if there's a message here. God has a plan that goes beyond the conventions of human society. As Paul Simon once sang, God only knows, God makes his plan, the information unavailable to the mortal man. For us, this consistent reversal of the traditional roles teaches a different lesson. In the negative formulation, Shakespeare has Caesar say, the fault, dear Brutus, lies not in our stars, but in ourselves. That is, we can't attribute our own failures to our birth order, or our horoscope, or even our parents. Life happens. But how we respond to it is up to us, not to our birth order. What we can do is control our own actions and our own choices. We each have the ability to shape our destinies. Like Ephraim or like Joseph himself or his own father Jacob, we may be born into less favor and fortune than others, but we can make our own way to success and goodness and to God, if we work and care and continue to seek holiness. When we come back on Too Jewish, our guest, celebrity chef Jamie Geller, will explain just what makes kosher cooking a true joy. Find out when we return on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114. We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
A Hezbollah commander who fought in Syria's civil war was shot dead outside his home in Lebanon last week. Of course, the terrorist Shiite group Hezbollah blamed Israel. However, Israel denied any role in the killing of Hassan al-Lakis, shot from close range by a silenced gun when he arrived home in Beirut. Al-Lakis was a senior Hezbollah terror commander. His death is the biggest operational blow to the Lebanese organization since the death of Imad Mughniyeh, the Hezbollah chief of staff, assassinated in Damascus in February of 2008. A previously unknown group, Arar al-Sunna Baalbek Brigade, claimed responsibility for the attack in a message on Twitter. That claim cannot be verified, but the name of the group suggests a Lebanese Sunni Muslim connection. The Shiite terrorist group Hezbollah, which fought a 34-day war with Israel in 2006, has been sending terrorist fighters into neighboring Syria in support of President Bashar al-Assad against the mainly Sunni Muslim rebels, an intervention that's raised sectarian tension in next-door Lebanon. Hezbollah described Lakis as one of the leaders of the Islamic resistance against Israel. He's been with Hezbollah since it was created with Iranian support in the 1980s to fight Israeli troops then occupying southern Lebanon. Lakis's son was killed in the 2006 war against Israel. The Israeli enemy tried to get to our martyr brothers several times in more than one location, but those attempts failed until this repugnant assassination, it said. Hezbollah said Israel will bear full responsibility and all the consequences for this heinous crime. Israel, however, denies involvement. This has strictly nothing to do with Israel, Foreign Ministry spokesman Yigal Palmore said. Hezbollah has made a fool of itself in the past with these automatic and groundless accusations against Israel. If they are looking for explanations as to what is happening to them, they should examine their own actions. Could well be the case. The U.S. has developed a plan for security arrangements in the West Bank following the establishment of a Palestinian state. Retired U.S. General John Allen, who developed this concept, presented it during a meeting in Jerusalem last week between Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. Against the backdrop of tension between Israel and the U.S. over the Iranian nuclear issue, Netanyahu has tried to focus the talks with Kerry onto the nuclear issue and preparations for permanent agreement negotiations between Iran and the major powers. Kerry has been focusing his visit to Jerusalem and Ramallah on the peace process between Israel and the Palestinians. Negotiating teams from the two sides are continuing to meet twice a week, with the special American envoy, Martin Indyk, a past guest of Two Jewish, also in attendance. The talks are, however, not making much progress. The sides are engaged primarily in mutual accusations over construction in West Bank settlements by Israel and violent incitement by the Palestinians. Kerry has tried to take advantage of this visit to the region to shake up the two leaders and demand they return to serious negotiations and refrain from blaming one another. Kerry's talks with Netanyahu and Abbas focused on security issues on this visit. Defense Minister Moshe Ya'alon and Justice Minister Tzipi Livni, who is in charge of the negotiations with Palestinians on behalf of the government, participated as well. In other Israeli news, a house dating to the Hasmonean period was uncovered in East Jerusalem near the Temple Mount and announced for the first time during the holiday of Hanukkah last week. The building is located in Ir David, the City of David area. That's where we'll be visiting on my next trip to Israel, by the way, less than 50 yards from the Temple Mount. This marks the first time a Hasmonean-era structure has been discovered in Jerusalem. The house that was found is 12 feet tall and covers an area of a little less than 600 square feet. Pottery and coins from the Hasmonean period have been discovered in Jerusalem many times before, but never has a house from the time of the Maccabees emerged, according to the Israel Antiquities Authority. Coins found in the building dated as being constructed in the 2nd century BCE before the Hasmonean era and show that it was still standing during the reign of Antiochus IV Epiphanes, the Syrian-Greek Seleucid evil emperor of the Hanukkah story, and during the Hasmonean uprising, from which the holiday of Hanukkah, of course, is derived. Excavation directors Doron Ben-Ami and Yana Chechanovitz said the building's discovery bridges a gap in Jerusalem's settlement sequence. The Hasmonean city, which is well known to us from the historical descriptions that appear in the works of Josephus, has suddenly acquired tangible expression. And we learned about it on Hanukkah. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Round the World. We are delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish, our guest this morning, Jamie Geller, the author of Joy of Kosher, Fast Fresh Family Recipes. She's the best-selling author of Quick and Kosher, the founder of the Kosher Media Network, who has been very active in media, was active in media for a long time, and now has a wonderful new cookbook. So I have to confess, I was sitting around the dinner table and my kids were delineating the not very many things that I can make for dinner.
I was going to say, it's really a little awkward to get a confession from a rabbi. Usually it goes the other way around.
Yes, it does. And I'm not asking for absolution, not being Catholic or anything. But one of the really delightful things about this book is, you know, a lot of these really are not particularly difficult to make. If I can make something, it can't be that difficult. So tell me how you decide, because obviously you're a skilled cook now, what's easy enough for anybody to do? How do you dress it up with more skill levels within a book like that?
Right. So the criteria for the book is fast and easy and doable. And either we want it to be easy because we want somebody who doesn't have a lot of skill in the kitchen to be able to execute everything. I call this real food for real people. And then the other thing is it also has to be fast, because let's say somebody is doing something that's that, but even if they have a skill level, they might not have the time. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So really ease and fast is a prerequisite for every single recipe in the book. And then, like I said, you can dress it up because you can make it fancier for whether you want to bump up your skill level or you're entertaining or you've got a holiday or it's a Shabbat meal. So that's the idea behind the book and the recipes.
Yeah, a funny question. For those people who are observant, Shabbat represents both a wonderful opportunity and for Shabbat lunch, a gigantic challenge. What kinds of recipes work for that setting?
Oh, so, I mean, first of all, every single recipe in the book. How is that? I mean, it really is the recipe. The book is a recipe for success when it comes to entertaining and entertaining with ease. But I love salads. I love doing cholent, of course, and I have a Sephardic-inspired cholent in this book because I think I was like a Sephardic princess in a past life. I love the music. I love the food. I love cumin. Like, it's all in there. So I have a Sephardic cholent for that. I've got great chicken dishes that you can serve at room temperature as well because you don't want to, like, you prepare, you put things in the fridge, you want to rewarm them, you could kill something doing that. So you want to make sure that you use things that are adaptable, that can be made in advance, that in fact marinate or get even better when made in advance. I've got a great eggplant caviar for something like that. I've got homemade hummus. I've got tzatziki. A really fun, flavorful, a lot of Mediterranean, Middle Eastern, Moroccan influences. And also from my Eastern European background, I've got some great things in there. My father's potato cocoa, which was my grandfather's recipe. And then I dress it up by putting a layer of pastrami in the middle. So we've got raw root vegetable salad in there and pastrami potato cocoa in there. So that shows you the range of what you can do for Shabbat lunch or any day of the week.
Cooking kosher presents challenges. In some ways, it probably helped you that you weren't, shall we say, the most advanced cook before you were more observant. Tell us a little bit about some of the substitutions and some of the things that just don't really work as kosher recipes.
Right. So what's funny, I would actually say most things work these days. I mean, you know, there's a new product called Fakin. So now you can even do
bacon.
It's like the kosher version of bacon. I'm saying everything is out there. I just had I had a meeting today out in Jersey with a company that makes all of the non-dairy sour creams and cream cheeses.
Right.
I use a lot of coconut milk that's out there, and it's super creamy. You can make your own homemade non-dairy whipped cream, and it tastes just as good and just as flavorful.
Yeah, coconut milk. We discovered it like a year or two ago, and it's fantastic.
Yeah. It really, really is. So from soy milk to coconut milk to almond milk, and there's a use for each of them, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
It really, you could almost recreate. So in our, you know, I have a website, joyofkosher.com, and we also have a magazine, Joy of Kosher with Jamie Geller. And in an upcoming issue of our magazine, we're doing chicken parmesan, a chicken fettuccine alfredo. I mean, these things were taboo to the kosher cook, and I promise you they're 100% kosher.
Your kids show up a lot in your book. Do they help you in the kitchen at their advanced ages?
Yes, you know, I was so scared of the kitchen. I was not, as my mother never wanted me to be a balabusta, right?
She right. Well, that's the Jewish joke. What does a Jewish wife make for dinner reservations? So
right, exactly. And that's the type of mother she was. That's what she hoped for. She wanted me to be a career woman. She wanted me to be the first woman Jewish president of the United States. So I never was trained in the kitchen. Never. I never studied under the foot of my mother and my grandparents. I never lifted a fork. And I was so scared and overwhelmed. So I think the most important thing that you can do, because if we know how to cook for ourselves, we can eat healthier, it empowers us. Get your kids in the kitchen as early as possible. Involve them. Some will have the bug, some won't. I have a few kids that love to cook with me. I have one that loves to help me serve and just make things pretty on the plate and set the table and clear the table. That's also part of it. So just get them in there in whatever way they love. And as soon as you can, I think that's a really great life lesson.
What do they like best out of your recipes?
Oh, they're good. The kids are good. They eat vegetables. They eat salads. They like both sweet and savory. They're not just sugary dessert kids. So I really have no complaints. And they love, you know, great, fabulous, you know, dinner fresh chicken right out of the oven, the salt and pepper chicken that's on the cover of the book, which actually has caramelized fennel and shallots. That's a favorite one. I'm trying to think what else we've been eating lately. We just made funnel cakes. That's a nice little twist that we're doing for Hanukkah, because, you know, obviously the miracle is the oil. So instead of sufganiyot, the jelly donuts, we're doing funnel cakes this year. So we're having fun across the board, but they're great and super into fruits and veggies, and lots of incorporating lots of colors, both into our recipes and into the meals. And I think that's important for the kids to eat the colors of the rainbow.
You know, Israel used to be a kind of culinary wasteland. I don't know how else to say that. When I first went there in 1976, the food was not exceptional. It's fantastic now. Tell me about how that's influenced you.
It's amazing. Look, it's like kosher food as well. I mean, we've all stepped up. We're living in a foodie generation. Master Chef Israel is like one of the most popular programs after sports. So that just shows you where the world is going. And I have to say that Israel has 100 different cultures, Jewish cultures, represented there. So it's really a literal cultural and melting pot, or chicken soup, if you will, of all the different types of influences from all over the world who've now come together and are bringing their food to this, our homeland and this country. So
kind of the promised land of food at this point.
Yeah, and much more, of course. I don't want to minimize it, but so many wonderful things are happening there, so it's super inspiring. But I find that, again, across the kosher world and the products that are available and the types of cooking and the foodies that are out there, the kosher restaurants that are popping up, the things that people are putting on their Hanukkah or Shabbat table, everything has inspired me.
When you meet a woman or man, young woman or young man today, who say, well, I don't really know how to cook, what do you tell them to do first?
Well, I tell them to buy my book. Right?
The Joy of Kosher, Fast, Fresh Family Recipes by Jamie Gunn.
Totally, or you can visit us on joyofkosher.com.
Joyofkosher.com, of course.
Don't be scared. Meaning, like, my books and everything that I do, it's all about overcoming what you think your nature to be. I never thought I could cook. And now I have recipes, a magazine, and a website. I never thought, I told my husband on our first date, I will never live in Israel. He said he wanted to live there. I said, go find another girl. And now my husband's like, he calls me reborn, you know, like I'm the spokesperson for living in Israel. So I think a lot of what we think we can't do or don't know how to do or are too scared to do, it's just an issue of starting. Step one, do it with a smile. And start slow. I mean, if you don't think you don't know how to cook or you can't, so of course, don't go buy a book where the recipe is 2 pages long and will take, you know, 3 days to recreate. Start slow, start simple, and remember, it's about the quality of ingredients. So fewer ingredients, let them shine, go with the simple recipe type of books, and again, don't be scared and do it with a smile.
You know, I have to say one of the really lovely things, because not everybody lives in New York City, not everybody lives in Israel, where lots of kosher ingredients are easily available. A lot of your recipes simply require good, fresh ingredients that their kosher isn't the overriding principle. Was that by intent?
Yes, of course. I mean, we want the food to be, want it to be affordable, we want it to be accessible, and we want this book to be appeal to a lot of people. My thought and theory in life is that we all are more alike than we are different. And we use words like kosher, or whether it's religion, or within Judaism, the different, you know, conservative, reform, orthodox, or whether it's politics, we use all these types of signifiers to separate us and to divide us. And instead, I think food is a wonderful, unifying opportunity. It's a way to get us all around the table, have a shared experience. So yes, even though it's Joy of Kosher, if you just call it Fast, Fresh Family Recipes, you could leaf through this book. Don't let that word deter you. You can leaf through this book and you can find incredible meals, accessible ingredients that are available to everyone and that would, you know, tickle your palate, if you will.
I want to thank Jamie Geller for a wonderful visit from the locked in the restroom. As we mentioned earlier.
Totally. It's not embarrassing, but it's cool. I think, you know, it's definitely a story that we can each tell from now till
forever. It's a groundbreaking experience here. We should say a shehechianu.
But I can't because I'm in the bathroom.
No, you're right. That's right. You have to wait till you get out. Oh, my God. Anyway, delighted to have you here. It's called Joy of Kosher, Fast, Fresh Family Recipes. You can go to joyofkosher.com. Jamie, thanks for a great visit.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 o'clock. Our guest will be Rabbi Asher Lo Patton, the head of Yeshivat Chovavei Torah, one of the most interesting and prominent new liberal voices in the Orthodox world and a strong advocate of open Orthodoxy. Our playout this morning comes from the group Kol Ish. It's their rendition of Yigdal, the hymn often sung at the end of Shabbat and festival services. My friends, have a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace. Shavua Tov. Love.